There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, where we go, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along. Phone line, text line, communication, 343-0106, 343-0106. Plus, you can hit me up on Twitter, at FM Talk 106.5, and check us out on the website, fmtalk1065.com, where, amongst many things there, you can take part in our online opinion poll question. Should we stick with daylight saving time? President Trump doubling down on that yesterday. Numbers have been swaying back and forth. Around the 80% of y'all saying yes. You can vote online. Also, while you're there, grab podcast. All kind of good stuff going on our website. It's also the second Tuesday of the month. And when that happens, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran joins us in studio. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Glad to be here, Sean.
Good to have you here, too. And now, on we mentioned it last time we talked. It would be Mardi Gras 2019 in the rear view. At this point, so you rested back up since?
Yeah, I think so. I think everybody's caught their second, you know, rested up, ready to go again, wait for the springtime now. We still have a lot of springtime to look forward to in front of us.
But y'all work, I mean, the hours worked during Mardi Gras by law enforcement. It's I mean, not just y'all with Sheriff's Department, but MPD as well.
Yeah, the MPD, you know, carries a bulk of the load, but we have a lot of deputies that work a lot of long hours, too. But, you know, it's... While it's a sacrifice, it's also a very good thing for us because it gives us an opportunity for the deputies to get around and meet and visit everyday citizens, mm-hmm. and not people that they're having to arrest or answer right. a call on. I mean, they just have a good exchange, and so the citizens get to meet the deputies and vice versa, and it's a great public relations opportunity for us.
Yeah, this was the issue for MPD, not y'all as much, but of course it is actually in the investigative department, shootings again at Mardi Gras.
There were a couple.
What goes on with that? Is it just, are they, just in your sense, I know we can't talk case by case, but generally, are those shootings that would have happened anyway somewhere else and happened to go down at Mardi Gras, or is it something about everybody being downtown in one place?
I think so. I think they would have happened somewhere else. I think what you're seeing is that, and we've talked about this many times, proliferation of handguns. So many people have handguns. So many handguns are stolen out of automobiles. So many young thugs are carrying guns. They can get them so easy, and Mardi Gras is a place where they meet. Many, many years ago, we had a lot of shootings at Mardi Gras. That was mm-hmm. back in the late 90s, maybe the early 2000s, and for several years, we were able to crack down and put a stop to it. And I think this particular year is a little bit of an anomaly. You had, I guess it was two different shootings.
Two different shootings.
One of them was at 2:30 in the morning, I think, in front of the Sanger Theater. And
yeah.
I think that was around a rap concert more so than Mardi Gras. I mean, it may have had a rap concert
right.
because of Mardi Gras, but I wouldn't connect that specifically to Mardi Gras, and then the other was down by the McDonald's at Washington Avenue and Government Street.
I mean, it's when you have...
Two 17-year-olds, I think.
Right, but I mean, it's scary at any point, but when you have such a density of people around, even late into the night, you have, you know, people out having a good time downtown, and bullets, people just start pulling a trigger.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's so dangerous, and especially, you know, when you have out-of-towners.
We'll get you a little closer to that mic, too. There we go.
Out-of-towners in town, you know, and just trying to have a good time and make the best of it, stay out late, and enjoy the city.
And then here comes somebody just pulling trigger.
Shooting. Yeah, it's crazy.
Okay, I want to talk about, we got some people holding a couple questions about different subjects we'll get into, but in general, I do want to talk guns with you this mm-hmm. hour on several fronts here, and also a couple things going on in Montgomery right now in session that affect law enforcement. But first of all, you mentioned it, you've mentioned it before, there's a push, of course, to bring attention to the number of guns that are used in crimes that are stolen out of vehicles.
a huge number of guns are stolen out of vehicles, and a huge number of guns that are stolen out of vehicles are not reported to us as being stolen. So those guns are floating around on the streets. And
why does it help you if we lose a gun? Why does it help you if we report that gun?
Well, if we recover it at a crime scene, run the serial number and find out it was stolen, well, we may not be able to solve that individual shooting there, but we may go back and say, wait a minute, this gun was stolen in that auto burglary or this house burglary. So you go back and double-check that, and maybe you find out, hey, wait a minute, the guy that was around that burglary was a guy that was around this scene of the shooting. And, you know, it helps you gather the evidence and could very well solve the shooting or murder that stolen gun was used in.
Because, I mean, I don't know how individuals think, but the reaction might be, if you had a bunch of things stolen and the gun was one of them, mm-hmm. you may get a police report, right,
yes.
on what,
mm-hmm.
what happened here. But if it was just one gun, you might think, listen, I'm not going to bother them, I'm not going to...
Well, I think it's probably more out of embarrassment and stupidity.
Well, there's that, too.
You know, they don't want to do it because, you know, the gun that was used to kill Officer Tudor was a stolen gun, but it was not reported as stolen. They had to trace the gun through the original sales and went through a pawn shop and somewhere else, and then a person said, yeah, I sold it to this person. They go check with him. He said, yeah, it was stolen out of my truck.
Okay, but still, even if it is, you want people to report that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that helps you going
mm-hmm.
forward.
Sure, it certainly does. Because, you know, it may give us an opportunity to get that stolen gun off the streets if we recover it somewhere. It may help us solve a crime that it's used in.
Is there that? I mean, to report that many stolen guns makes me think there's got to be that many unlocked vehicles. Is there a wide range of just theft in general coming out of vehicles in our area, in Mobile County?
Yeah, so it's a whole lot easier to break into automobiles or open automobiles that are unlocked than to kick someone's door in or go into their house during the night when it's right. occupied, or maybe in the daytime when it may be occupied or when people can see you. So there's a lot of auto burglaries occur, and they come in spurts, but occur in neighborhoods during the middle of the night where people just ease up and down the streets. And we've seen this from a lot of video recordings from, you know, neighbors that have mm-hmm. video cameras, and you can see somebody just walks up and down the street. You'll see them walk up to a car and pull on the door handle. If it opens, they go in it and rummage through it. If it's locked, they move on to the neighbors.
All right. With that being said, so percentage, you've rolled this out before, percentage of the violent crimes that are committed in our area with those guns, what percent are stolen?
Oh, I think probably 80% or so, or something
80%.
Like that. It's a huge number, I mean, are stolen.
And that's what I want to get into, because we come back from the break, we'll take a call or two, but I want to get into additional gun regulations, something they tried to pass in the House, something's happening right now with bump stocks. And my question would be back to you, in mm-hmm. a lifetime in law enforcement, mm-hmm. does regulating, putting additional burdens on law-abiding citizens make any difference of what the criminals, I mean, by their nature... I mean, that's why, they're talking about gun-free zones. Like, the criminals can say, oh, well, I'd go commit the crime, but that's in a gun-free zone. I mean, really?
Yeah, most people don't even know what a gun-free zone is, and criminals certainly
right.
don't. But, we say additional burdens. I'm not for putting additional burdens on citizens, but I think we have some reasonable, very minor burdens on citizens now, and I think that's sufficient.
Okay, we come back. I want to talk about this idea of person-to-person gun sale mm-hmm. and transfer. Also, this question about bump stocks and the president moving on this, making them, these are illegal. This passed through legislature, and now ATF says you have a certain amount of time to turn them in, or you are...
violating the federal gun laws, could be charged and arrested after March 26 on bump stocks.
All right, we'll talk about this when we get back. More with Sheriff Sam Cochran, and we'll take your calls and texts at 343-0106. Coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
119 FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back, Midday Mobile. Second Tuesday of the month, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest, and your chance to ask the sheriff. And we'll do that here from the text line and the phone lines, both coming through at 343-0106, 343-0106. Cameron asks on the text line, Sheriff, if there are that many stolen guns, what are we doing about the increase of car burglaries?
Well, we try to identify where the burglaries are taking place and put extra patrols in those areas. We process them, and generally we'll identify and make arrest of individuals. This Corey Booker or Corey, somebody were arrested last week. He was responsible for a lot of the car burglaries, and we've already seen a marked decrease in burglaries since he's been in jail.
Listen to that. You make the arrest, you know,
one person commits dozens and dozens of car burglaries, and they just live off. I mean, they traffic guns as a result of car burglaries. Generally, the guns are the most important because people don't leave their iPhones or nothing in the car anymore. It's going to be in their hand wherever they go, just about. But guns are left in cars, and they're easy to sell on the streets.
All right, let's go to Bob in Mobile first. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Sean. Hey, Sam.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm a gun owner.
Yes.
And every night I have my gun. I have a conceal and carry.
Mm-hmm.
I keep it in my car. I carry it with me. I don't carry it on my person unless I'm in certain places.
Sure.
But every night before I go in, I take that gun and I keep it with me by my bedside, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But shouldn't there be some responsibility on the gun owners that these crimes are committed? Should there not be something that the sheriff could do to say, okay, if this happens and you're under your gun ownership, your purview, not that the gun was stolen out of your car at night, but that you were irresponsible leaving it laying out there. I mean, there ought to be something. I know that's in another regulation, but we've had two or three deaths because of guns stolen out of somebody's car.
Yeah, you're so right, and it is a responsibility. In times past, before the laws were so... became so lenient and a lot of the power of the sheriffs were taken away, the sheriffs could of course suspend or revoke someone's pistol permit if they were, you know, irresponsible with the pistol, but it's very limited situations where we can do that.
It's hard to pass the truth out of that too. Yeah.
If you start doing that, then they may not tell you that it's stolen, you know,
right.
and never report
right.
it. So we do want them to report it.
Yep, I guess you're right. I don't know. It just seems like, you know, with Officer Tudor and some of the other things that have happened, that it's just there's got to be something that says, you know, you got the privilege of owning and using a gun and carrying it with you and everything else, you know, take care of the damn
thing. And I agree, intended, but before everybody just floods the text line, it's a right, not a privilege, to own the gun. So the concealed carry is different, but the owning the gun, that's a right.
That's right. And you say, okay, who's the victim here? You know, he was still, somebody came on your property and stole your property and
that's right.
stuff like that. So it's a tough thing and no easy answer, but we are trying to really emphasize that, advertise it. The police department's doing a public service announcement, an advertisement, and I know Chief Batiste and Chief mm-hmm. Barber and myself, everywhere we go, we stress how important it is to secure those guns.
All right, and appreciate the call, Bob.
Yes.
This James says, I'd like to hear more on how the data is collected on stolen guns. How do you... Well,
when someone reports the theft, if they have the serial number, we'll list it and put it on the computers. And so anywhere in the country, if it's recovered with a serial number, we recover it. Now, if it's not a serialized number, we still list it as a model number and make or a pistol or a rifle, shotgun, whatever. So we have records that we can, you know, spit out of our computer system to see how many guns or firearms are stolen.
Yeah, I get torn on this because just like the discussion of, I agree with the locking the vehicle up.
Mm-hmm.
You and I have discussed that my truck stays in a garage, different story, mm-hmm. and again, glove box, lock, and if I may or may not have a gun. I may or may not mm-hmm. have a concealed carry permit, but if I did, how I would go about those things. But at the same time, it's tough for me to just jump all over somebody that, you know, that one day that they forgot to lock their car or something
human.
Like
you can,
that. It's
that happens. It happens to all of us. Probably you forget to lock the car sometimes, maybe. But again, as Bob mentioned, when he gets out of his car at night or something, he carries his handgun in. But now there are some that would say, well, I want to leave in my car because I've got small kids in the house
mm-hmm.
and I don't want it in the house. And they're, you know, so there's lots of reasons. And of course, if you know, there's going to be certain circumstances where it's in a locked car and the car is broken into, and of course, there's good, you know,
yeah.
some businesses, some government agencies, you can't carry a concealed carry into the federal courthouse and others, so you're going to have to leave in your car, but just make sure it's out of sight and locked up, and that's the best you can do in those circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, there's been
just not carry it with you when you know you're going to a place like that.
Right, but that's tough, right? I mean,
sure,
because you
may go several other places, and you know,
right? You don't, and the
that's
idea
the purpose
is
of carrying it with you. You don't know when it's going to happen, so you better.
That's right.
Going to be worth something, you need to carry it with you all the time.
And if I did,
one time you don't, it's when somebody's going to rob you.
Right. Well, and folks like you have taught me over time, if I may or may not conceal and carry,
mm-hmm.
that I'm delinquent because I I'm not carrying right now. I'm not going to carry there. You know, I don't want to do it right now. I'll leave it here. Or leave, you know, I was going to leave it at the house or leave it in the truck locked up. And that is like you have any idea when something.
Yeah, and then that
happen.
When
you're
you do something like that, that's when you start getting careless, and that's when you forgot that it's in your briefcase and you go to get on an airplane, and somebody says, "Whoa, Mr. Sullivan, need to step aside here." Or something.
That's just
you'd be
pro
surprised
athletes.
How just pro athletes. How many times that happens to people? And then, of course, you know, how do they not know they had a gun in their luggage or something? But
yeah, I've never had that. I did lose a Leatherman at the Pensacola airport when TSA checked, and it was in one of my pockets. And you know how much Leatherman cost?
Sure,
okay.
Yeah.
Let's go. Another Bob. This one in Bob in Fairhope. You're on with Sheriff Cochran. Hey, Bob.
Gentlemen, good afternoon. How are y'all?
Yes, sir. Good. Thank you.
Hey, question. I know you mentioned 80% on the car break-ins on that percent, but what's the house percentage? You know, the break-ins and homes that actually, or do you have that number of homes that have been broke into that have had stolen firearms?
I don't have that off the top of my head. We certainly keep those records, you know, and firearms, rifles, and shotguns are a common item that's stolen out of homes and break-ins because they're, once again, are worth a lot of money.
The reason why I mentioned that, I know the previous caller, and this is a slippery slope. I mean, I have multiple, as Sean would say, may or may not have multiple firearms, but if I keep one in my car, one on my side, one on my, you know, nightstand, you know, strategically have them all over, you know, what layer, you know, if it's, your car's locked, you know, how many layers do you have to have? I lock the door, then it's got, is it the second layer that I've got to have the glove box locked? And, you know, so if there's going to be reprimand for that, then what happens if somebody breaks into my house? I've got my door locked. And then, you know, my closet door is locked. I just disagreed with his comment because it could be a slippery slope if you start trying to do that.
You're right, and I think even the caller admitted that it was just so many regulations, just cautious. But, you know, as responsible gun owners and as people that want to keep your property, of course, I graduated up to a nice safe in my house, but before that, I had one of these little small metal things you can get for it'd be on sale for $99 at Sports Academy. It's a locker and hold about 10 or 12 long arms in it, and had a key, but it had two or three locks on it, and I bolted it to the wall, and I bolted it from the inside of the safe, and so I was able to secure, you know, many guns, if I had many guns in that thing for $99, and it would have taken somebody quite a while with a crowbar and some other stuff to break into that minimal thing.
Yeah, and there's and Bob, go ahead.
And I get you, and that was my point there. I mean, I don't want folks stealing guns, but I just wanted to make a comment that I think it'd be a slippery slope on the cars and then into the houses, and you know what's next. But,
I had stuff stolen. Our house was burglarized a couple of times when I was a kid, and that stuck with me. And I had a little BB pistol was stolen, and that tore me up. And I think it's one of the reasons I've enjoyed what I do all these years is arresting people for doing that very same thing.
I'll be darned, because I lost a Benjamin pellet gun that I had worked and saved up for as a boy. It got stolen. So if you could ever go find who did that to me when I was a kid, arrest them, please.
Yes, sir.
Bob, I appreciate the call. And that's the thing. What a good, fair discussion, because I'm like, Bob, in the spirit of it, I'm with you. I'm not contrary to spirit. I want, I want to make our community as safe as possible. At the same time, there's a certain level where I go, but how far do I have to go? And I have a part of it. I'm a citizen. I live here. I'm a homeboy. But at a part of it too, I have a certain inalienable rights that I'm going to stick with. Right. And
that's
defend.
Right.
So it's okay. So with these stolen guns, you're talking about that it is. I mean, if they could be gone, or severely reduced, you're talking about a huge reduction in violent crime.
Absolutely.
So I mean, there's got to be a way we can voluntarily do things better, and I think I'm behind that spirit.
Well, yes, and I think that's where leaders have to speak out and just make sure that the public is aware and you know, encourage people to record their serial numbers. And that now so easy, you can just take a photo with your phone and save it on your phone of all your serial numbers on your pistols and rifles and they get stolen, you immediately say, well, yes, sir, officer, I've got the, in fact, I've got a picture of it, and here's a serial number. And that would help us tremendously to recover, because so few of them are recovered.
Mm-hmm.
And
you got to put it somewhere else. I'll say this, if you have one of those great Mike Ward's Liberty safes, like I may or may not with guns, the idea of recording all your serial numbers and doing all this, I went the first time, did that, and said, I'm going to put it in the safe. I said, wait a second, don't put it with the stuff, put it somewhere. Don't record all the numbers, Sullivan, and put them with the things you're trying to protect.
Yeah.
Let me grab one more here before the news break. Vern is in Mobile. You're on with Sheriff Cochran.
Hey, Sean. So I took pictures of all my pistols. I wrote the serial numbers down, and I stored them in my laptop. I put my laptop in a laptop bag with my pistol in my trunk, and I locked my car religiously. Still with me?
Yes. I'm with you.
All right. My wife, however, who I'm a happily married man, I'm fully trained, okay? My wife is somewhat reluctant to lock her car. We got two Lexuses, a white 350 and a black 350.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They latched her car, rifled it, opened the center console, found her spare set of keys to my car, which I told her never leave in her car.
Oh, no.
Used that, opened the car, got all the cash out of my center console, would have done some changes, some ones and fives, and then popped the trunk, stole my laptop with my pistol, which had all my serial numbers, and my pictures of my gun.
This is what you're describing my nightmare here.
He's a loving husband, is all I can say.
He's been well trained. Bert, I appreciate the call. We got to run to the news break, the hard break here, but we'll be right back and talking more with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. Your chance to ask the sheriff. And I got a couple questions here on guns.
Sure.
All right, we'll get to them when we get back.
Absolutely.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135 FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. Your chance to ask the sheriff, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest. You can hop on the line now. Hey, heads up as well. Been shaving with Harry's for years now, and I guess the key to the whole thing, there's all kind of great things to tell you about Harry's, but if the shave wasn't good, well, then the rest of it would just be window dressing. Lucky for us, the shave is fantastic. The blades are great, and right now there's a great, great chance for you to see what I've been talking about all these years. Here's the deal. Right now, with Harry's, you can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and travel cover for just $3, plus free shipping when you go to harrys.com and use my code MOBILE. Now, you'll love the convenience of having those blades show up at the house every month. Depending on how many you use, you customize that with Harry's. They show up. You don't have to remember to go to the store. And for the fiscally conservative out there like me, how about paying half of what you're paying right now at the grocery store or the pharmacy for those replacement blades? That's how it works with Harry's. Great introduction to what I've been talking about. Limited time offer, Harry's special offer for listeners of Midday Mobile. New customers, so I don't get this one, but you do. New customers get $5 off a trial set from Harry's when you use code MOBILE at harrys.com. It means you get the razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, travel cover, all for just $3, plus free shipping when you use code MOBILE at harrys.com. So go to harrys.com today, use code MOBILE at checkout to claim your offer and let them know I sent you to help support Midday Mobile. All right, check it out, because it's good stuff. There's reason they've been on with us for years and years and years. Our guest, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, joining us to give you a chance to ask the sheriff. We're talking about guns. I know there are a couple other questions, and people can hop on, but I do want to get through the discussion number one that we did about stolen guns used in crimes. And that percentage, if somebody wasn't listening earlier.
Oh, this is as high as 80% sometimes. I mean, but again, some of the guns that are used are, we don't know they're stolen because they're not reported stolen.
So
that's where most of the guns on the streets come from.
So if somebody gets a gun stolen, it helps y'all with what may be a gun used in a further crime to go ahead and report that gun stolen.
Yeah, because now we've got two crimes we know the gun's involved with, and by combining those two crimes together, we may come across a suspect.
It helps you make an arrest sometimes,
sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
All right.
We'd rather you report it to us and us make less intimidating to you for leaving it unlocked than to not report it at all.
Right. Well, that was one of the discussions where people want to really slap wrist on people who have an unlocked car and get a gun stolen. I think in spirit, a lot of us say, yeah, people need to be aware. Let's not, I mean, you wouldn't leave it open. My fear would be you leave it open, a child get in or something like that. But on top of that, you don't want to discourage people
right.
because that information is important.
Right. If you made it a criminal offense or some kind of fine, then they would not report it to us at all.
All right. And we'll come back to guns in a second, because I do want to get your perspective on some federal issues, bump mm-hmm. stock issue here, and person-to-person sales on guns.
Yeah. There was a bill just recently passed in the House by the Democratic-controlled House now that to limit gun sales and require gun checks on every sale that takes place. And
mm-hmm.
and the big argument there is, of course, they're trying to get some trade shows, gun shows and stuff, but what they're also getting at, and this would be so patently unfair is why people are against it, is if I wanted to transfer a gun to my son or something, or sell it to him, transfer it to him, I'd have to do a background check on him, or have to have a check done, and ultimately that's going to cost somebody some money somewhere to do that. Or if I've known you all my life and I say, well, Sean, I want to trade this rifle for your rifle and I want to sell it, we know each other, I don't need a background check to know that
right.
who you are. So
right.
There's a lot.
And it would be unenforceable, it seems like.
It would be. And kind of like this bump stock thing, you know, the federal government does not know who all has bump stocks.
Right.
But so you're supposed to destroy them or abandon them through the ATF by March the 26th. If not, you're in violation of the Federal Gun Act and could it'd be a felony. And, you know, I would caution people to say, well, they'll never know. I know it. Don't do that, because you just never know what could happen. Your house could catch fire, the fire department could come out, police department, or some kid breaks into your house and steals it, and then they turn around and say, I got it from his house, and next thing you know, it's not worth the risk. But
this is beyond frustrating to me, and I've ranted about this, and I'm going to push back and say that if this would have happened under former President Obama, my phone lines would have been full every day about this. But because of people just, and this is not anti-Trump, it's anti-people who cannot be, you're being hypocrites. This ban, it bothers me big time. It is a piece of polycarbonate plastic. It doesn't make a gun, it lets a gun function the same way you can do the same thing with a belt loop. I don't want to get into details, but mm-hmm. you could take a semi-automatic rifle and do the same mechanism with a belt loop. It is an add-on. It doesn't, by itself, it does not do anything. An add-on that now, if somebody doesn't go turn in a bump stock, that person could be a felon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the dichotomy, you know, under the Obama administration, they green-lighted it and said it was legal. And then under the Trump administration, the Attorney General, Robert Whitaker, is that his name, the acting, mm-hmm. he signed it and made it an offense because they had ATF reclassified as a machine gun. And
but it's not,
the big difference, of course, is Las Vegas. And that, we know that's the driving force. And,
yes.
and the fact that they weren't that popular to begin with is just not touching that many
people.
But
not popular. We're not a country that's based on mass emotion, Sheriff. We're the individual liberty and the rule of law.
That's exactly right. And it's a good argument. And there are people that have taken it to court. And so, no telling how it'll turn out.
But yeah, what happens to somebody who has turned in a bump stock and let's say it's overturned in court, now they're at a loss for something they can't replace?
Well, that's why if they did have one, and I would suggest they turn it into ATF and get a receipt for it in case something ever comes in court and then says, well, the government's got to pay you back for it. But if you just destroy it, as they say you've got to do, or turn it in and not get a receipt, then you'd be out.
Wow. Yeah, I've talked about this a couple of times. Good to hear you bringing it back up, because I think people have been maybe heard it or not
heard
about
this at all. Well, it's not been that much on the news about it.
I push it here, but nobody seemed to care.
March 26th is the last day.
March 26th.
That's correct.
At that point, y'all, if you may or may not have a bump stock post March 26th, you're committing a felony.
Mm-hmm.
A felony.
Yeah, just like having a machine gun in your possession without
tax stamp.
Tax stuff.
Which is a whole other discussion if we have time. I do want to talk about suppressors. Let's go to the phones, though. Dale is in Mobile. Dale, you're on with Sheriff Cochran.
Sheriff Cochran, this is Dale Sawyer. Sean, thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Yes, sir.
Sheriff, I live in West Mobile, outside the city limits, where we're having our city services pulled
yes.
for us right now. We're having to create a fire department. Now we're faced with looking at Chris Elliott's bill, SB 23, and possibly the loss of our police protection in that area also. How is that going to affect our community? We're fairly densely populated. How's the sheriff's department going to be able to jump in there?
We wouldn't be. It would be disastrous, and I've communicated some of that information. I don't like jurisdictions. I wish there was a clear line between city and county, but this is created over a long period of time, and we can't just suddenly quit that. And this and a quick answer is for Commissioner Hudson and I met on this, and we calculated if that just that one portion of people out there that's under discussion. Well, no, if Elliott's bill passed, we would pick up somewhere around 100,000 people that we would be first responders for law enforcement. Now, if right. we did the same ratio to those as we do for the ones we respond to now, we would have to hire 90 additional deputies.
90.
I can't hire 10 deputies right now with funding. I wouldn't have the funding for the 90 deputies. If I did have the funding, it would probably take 5 years. So I support his idea, but he needs to perhaps if it could be phased in over a period of many,
well,
many years.
That seems fair, that the idea of phasing in. I mean, that
yeah.
you couldn't just wake up one day and not have...
Right, but it's a challenge for all of us. The police department, I'm sure they're very challenged with hiring enough police officers, and they're way down from what they were. I've been trying to hire, I've been recruiting, even paid recruiting bonuses and everything. I'm very short with deputies, but I'm even more short with corrections officers. It's, you know, this sounds terrible, but what for law enforcement, what we need is a recession. You know, because
let's hope not.
Yeah.
I'm the chair of the annexation committee. Hopefully, we're going to be able to work with the city, with the mayor and the council, and a good portion of our people be annexed and eliminate part of that problem. But I sure do appreciate your opinion. And
yes, sir.
We're having a meeting Thursday evening at 6:30 out there on Dollars Road at the Living Word Church. I'd like to invite you to come out and listen to what's happening at that meeting. If you'd like.
Okay, that's Thursday. This Thursday, right?
Thursday, 6:30. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Hey, Dale, appreciate the call. I want to talk about that. That's good because we had Senator Chris Elliott on talking about this bill. I've seen it from the municipalities. Some like it, some don't, but a lot of big municipalities like this idea of getting this jurisdiction off the road. I grew up here, so I always thought that's the way it was done. And I look elsewhere, it's not done that way everywhere. I mean, city limits end and jurisdiction ends.
Yeah, see, the problem, you know, the people in the jurisdiction, they don't have a vote, but they pay the taxes.
But they don't pay full. They don't pay full.
They pay half sales tax and half business license, but they don't get garbage pickup and they don't get trash pickup. But they do get police and fire protection. And so many of them, or mobilians really and truly, that moved out there not to get out of Mobile, but to move into a newer neighborhood, perhaps.
But they still
now,
moved outside
moved
the city.
Some moved purposely to get out. Yeah, they moved out, but it wasn't so much they were trying to do that. I spoke to a gentleman at church the other day. He said, I wasn't trying to get out of Mobile. He said, I just wanted a different house. And that's why he's out there. And he's going to be at that same meeting this gentleman just spoke of.
Well, I mean, but this the idea is, come on, the unspoken here is, this is a push for annexation.
Well, I don't know. You could say that perhaps, but you can also say, look, the city may not be able to hire enough police officers and they can't continue to police that large of an area.
Right, but if it's annexed in and you have full freight instead of half freight on those, you know, on those taxes,
then maybe they can hire more police officers.
But I do, where I see the commonality here and what Dale said and what you're saying, I would hope that if something like this goes through, a bill like this goes through, there's some kind of slow easing into this. It's not something that all of a sudden you wake up one morning and all, you know, that MPD is going to stop at the city limits and y'all are going to have to pick up there. Maybe some kind of sharing over a year's time to.
Sure, we've talked about that at the city before, about a sharing when this came up a couple of years ago when they were just getting shorthanded. But of course, Senator Elliott has said, well, put it into effect a year later or something. I think his intent was thinking that'd be enough time. Well, there's nowhere near enough time. And
you said 90? 90, you'd have to hire 90?
90 to, if 90 I wanted to have deputies. The same ratio of deputies to people we have now that we're first responders of.
It'd be the highest density population of anywhere y'all cover, right?
Yeah, it would double the amount of people we are first responders for.
Even though in actual acres, it's small, but in population, it doubles.
Yeah,
it.
See, Mobile's jurisdiction is somewhere 85,000 or something like that. And then Saraland has a good population. And then you've got, you know, Pritchard, we already pretty much handle their jurisdiction. You know, Bayou La Batterie, Citronelle, there's all of those combined. There's, you know, it would take away the jurisdiction of all those cities.
And put it to the okay.
And the other thing, see, that realize the county does not have taxing authority. So it's like if the city pulled back or pulled out and they stopped charging their sales tax, and then the county was forced to take over that area, you know, I would be forced to. I don't have any more revenue, and the county commissioners couldn't say, well, look, we're just going to add it 2.5 cents that the city was doing. They don't have the ability by law to pass a tax.
That has to come from
the state legislature.
Like so many things with the county. People don't realize that Montgomery
county can't pass sales tax. Cities can, but counties can't.
Well, that's a pickle.
So they would have to incorporate as a city if they wanted to pass the tax and then contract with the sheriff's office if they want to do that.
Or annex into
or
Mobile.
Annex into Mobile.
Coming right back. More with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. Your chance to ask the sheriff right here on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, breaking news right now. What had me watching what was happening in Montgomery last week. The reason I was there, because it was moving quickly, and it is, it's a thing. The Senate has passed the, and people call it the gas tax bill. It's actually three different bills. It's a suite of bills on infrastructure, and they have passed it, and it is moving, of course, out of the Senate. Now we'll go to Governor Ivey's desk for a signature. Obviously, with it being Governor Ivey's got a bill, we have a feeling that it'll be signed quickly. So once again, I just breaking right now that the trio of bills passed out of the Senate. That did not take long because we thought there'd be an amendment coming out of the Senate that would have to go back to the House, right? And it looks like they must have not done that, and it went straight to went straight through the Senate, and now it's out.
Senator Marsh said he did not expect any amendments to hold up. And that's
I think that's pretty hard for senators because they sure like to, even if they.
I'm sure there were a lot of them introduced and just all voted down so they could each go back to their constituents and say I tried this, tried that, but it was all for show. I mean that was fully agreed upon, as we all know, through the caucuses, and it's just one of those evils that you have to have sometimes, I guess.
Move fast.
Yeah, it was smart on Governor Ivey to move fast and caught everybody off guard, I guess, by calling a special session and. It's all over but the crying now.
Yeah, I would say this. It's being reported here. It said the Alabama Senate on Tuesday approved a bill to increase the state's gas tax by 10 cents per gallon. Don't want to get you. No, I do want to get y'all down the weeds because you listen to the show for that reason. That's one of the bills. And I guarantee you they passed the accountability bill first, then the taxing mechanism second, and then the funding for the Portermobile third. All three of those went through the Senate, and now this is on going to be on the governor's desk to sign. So this just happened.
So this is what to watch, Sean. As I understand it, it doesn't go into effect until August if it passed.
That's right.
All right, so pay attention to your service stations between now and August 1st and see if there's a jump or if they wait till August.
Hey, go take. Well, I mean, but they could be driven by world markets, right?
Well, yeah, sure. But I mean, you'll know what's world markets or a big jump. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll take pictures. I'll take some pictures. And we'll see what happens.
Well, if you go in and pay wide gas, go up. They say, well, they increase the taxes. Not till August.
That's right. Oh, that's a good point. So yeah, if anybody tells you between now and August that there's a jump
because of the tax, yeah,
go ahead and call baloney on them. Mm-hmm. Hey, speaking of the legislature and what you're doing, there's a bill up there dealing with the sheriff's food fund.
Yeah, finally we've got action on it. I think for once and for all, we're going to be able to pass a bill that does away with the ability of some sheriffs to pocket the money that's excess funds. And so it's
good.
A good bill, and I think the state is going to eliminate that from being able to have
it. As a sheriff, you say... good riddance.
Good riddance, the old way of doing it. I've never accepted that. I always thought it was bad. It gave us a black eye across the state. But let me be fair. The state's benefited all these years also because, see, the state is who's responsible for paying for the prisoners, the state prisoners, and they're only giving us $1.75 a day. The county of Mobile has been subsidizing the state to the tune of about $475,000 to $500,000 a year,
wow,
making up the excess amount of money to feed it because we can't feed them for $1.75. It takes us about $2.85 a day to feed them the three meals or whatever. And we contract it out, go with low bids, and then, of course, it's dietary. It meets the dietary needs. And, of course, we also have to feed some a special diet, you know, people with heart disease, low sodium, this, that, and sometimes people that are...
You know, a bunch of people just said, what?
Yeah, so we've been subsidizing, and the reason we've been doing this is because there's not been enough willingness or movement to change the law because there was both the state was benefiting and some sheriffs were benefiting.
But it really
and county commissions were benefiting. So now the county, you know, now that the state's going to pay more, the county commissions are going to be okay. But previously, the county commission would have to make up the difference because the state wouldn't.
But there was a story from another part of our state that probably helped motivate that, right?
Exactly, that Edward County sheriff, you know, in the beach house, we all know about that. But I say you can't really feed them for less than $1.75, but what some sheriffs are doing, going and getting donations of food given to them and buying in bulk and probably feed and not the best nutritionist meals and stuff like that. But then the ones that really made the money had contracts with the federal government. The government was paying them $8 a day to feed them, and they were feeding them for a couple of dollars
a day. Okay, roll that out again, because you and I have talked about this in the past, but this is one of these things people don't know. Okay, somebody, you have how much to feed a prisoner from the state?
The state gives us $1.75 a day to feed the prisoners.
$1.75
for a state prisoner, state inmate in county jail waiting for state offenses.
If you're holding a federal prisoner at the jail, you get
The different contract amounts, but some of them get as much as $8 a day.
I'd open up a new wing for the feds.
Well, quite frankly, that's what happened in some. The states that benefited, they added huge wings, where they housed
$8 versus $1.75.
Yeah, so they're housing hundreds of federal inmates, and that's where the money and the big profit for Etowah County was coming in. None of them wanted to talk about it. It was like a secret society, I guess you'd say, by some that were making it.
You've been talking about it a long time. You just said this is wrong. What's going on here? It looks like we've
got legislation drawn up, and we have a person working for us up there.
I think it starts out of the
House, but there's been meetings with both the appropriations committees in both the House and the Senate. And the last I knew, I think we had good. The only thing is just how much money it's going to be. We're targeting at least $3, $3.25, which would make up what the true cost is. But so the county will benefit and not have to subsidize it anymore. And then it'll be fair across the state to all the sheriffs, because some sheriffs, they couldn't feed them for that amount. So they were having to spend their time hustling up, old, damaged food and stuff like that just to be able to feed them, whereas others were making money
off it.
And a sheriff ought to be doing sheriff business, not chasing food and heading to the local food bank.
Well said. Thanks for your time again.
Hey, I appreciate the opportunity.
You're coming in next month. We're moving it to the third Tuesday.
Third Tuesday next month. I'm going to be in Montgomery working on a couple of bills.
All right, good thing. Thanks for being in. And yes, it's always a pleasure. If people want to reach out to you, how do they do it?
They can reach us on Facebook, follow us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and they can download our app through the app thing and check up on crime and get all our news 24 hours a day.
All right, good stuff. We're out of here. Paul Feinbaum on the way next. See y'all mañana.